Hello and welcome to this episode of The Complete Interpreter, the podcast by me, Sophie Llewellyn-Smith, otherwise known as The Interpreting Coach. Why The Complete Interpreter? Because you are more than an interpreting or translation machine. You run an interpreting business, like it or not. You are a whole person with other skills and interests, and so I try to bring you some holistic CPD, looking essentially at mindset, marketing one day perhaps, interpreting skills, use of language in your target language, and more. Today I am recording an episode about an interpreting skill, but it's not so much to do with interpreting the meaning of the words. It's more to do with managing a conversation in simultaneous where there are more than one speaker. It's about managing turn-taking when you have several speakers, but you are interpreting all of them. I was inspired to record this podcast episode by Rebecca, who wrote to me and said this: I have an interpreting question I've been mulling over for a while and wondered if you could cover it in one of your newsletters or podcasts. I do much more interpreting over Zoom these days, but I think it also applies to in-person interpreting. Often, if you're in a board-style meeting, people can get very animated and follow on from each other or even cut in. I'm never sure how the listener of my interpreting knows who is speaking when that happens. I spoke to one of my interpreting clients yesterday, and he said that it can be confusing when listening, in person or online. How do you know when one person starts and the other begins? I suggested that perhaps I should wait a sentence or two before restarting interpretation, inserting a break between speakers. But listeners would have to know that that is your approach, and the interpreter might miss things, especially as there is already a décalage. Do you have any thoughts on this? Is there something I should be doing to improve the listener's experience? Of course, better meeting discipline would also help. Thanks in advance. Well, no problem, Rebecca. You will know at the end of this episode whether I've said anything useful or not. So maybe your thanks in advance will have been misplaced. But hopefully I'll say something useful, and if not useful, then at least interesting. This is a situation that, as an interpreter, I have not had to deal with in quite the same way. You're talking about board-style meetings where people cut in or interrupt or talk over each other. Now, the vast majority of the work that I've done as an interpreter has been for the European institutions, and in the meeting rooms where I have worked, the technical equipment is set up in such a way, in most of the meeting rooms, that only one of the microphones in the room can be switched on at any one time. So sometimes that means that the speakers cut each other off, because if one person presses their microphone button, then it switches off somebody else's microphone, the previous speaker's microphone. So that can be a problem, microphone discipline for the speakers. But it does mean in general that you can't really have a conversation where three or four people are speaking over each other, because the technology doesn't allow for that. However, what I have had to do is try to clarify to my audience or my relay takers who is speaking when I am interpreting speakers one after the other who are speaking several different languages, all of which I interpret. Let me give you an example. My combination is French, German, and Greek into English. So let's say the French delegate speaks, and then the German delegate speaks, and I'm still interpreting, so people are hearing the same voice. And then the Greek delegate speaks, so again, this is me interpreting. And then Belgium speaks French, so I'm interpreting. It's important to make it clear that there is another speaker, not least because some of the people who are taking me on relay from the Greek that I'm interpreting into English won't necessarily need to take me on relay if I'm interpreting French into English, either because they have French in their combination or because they are the French booth. So they certainly don't want to be interpreting French into English into French, if you see what I mean. So that's the kind of situation where I have had to make it clear that there is a new speaker. I can absolutely relate to what you're saying, Rebecca. And this is something that comes up relatively frequently at my Rock Your Retour live sessions for English Retourists. So I have canvassed opinion among the interpreters that I work with to see what they do to make it clear who is speaking, or that there is a new speaker. But of course, I'm interested in what you, the audience, has to say about this. So please do send me an email if you have ideas that differ from what I am about to say. The email address is info@theinterpretingcoach.com. Rebecca, you have identified quite clearly the disadvantage with the approach that you're suggesting. Your suggestion is to leave a longer pause, not just a micro pause, but between two different speakers, you would drop a sentence or two, or you phrase it as wait a sentence or two before restarting interpretation. And the disadvantages are clear, as you say yourself, that you might be missing some information. You definitely have to try to summarize and keep the essentials in there. And also, for this system to work, your listeners would have to know that it's a deliberate technique. Otherwise, perhaps they might not understand that you are switching speakers and just wonder why there's a long pause, or think that you're leaving information out. Those are the disadvantages of that technique, which is not one that I have tried, I think, especially when the speakers were very fast. I don't think it occurred to me to think, I'm just going to wait for a couple of sentences. I would have been concerned about leaving information out, so I prefer using other techniques, and I'll go through some of those techniques now. When I have people in my Rock Your Retour sessions who are interpreting interviews, this happens relatively frequently, and when it is a question and answer format, then sometimes the interpreter will literally say, question, blah, 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 answer, blah, 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 blah. And then it's very clear that you have two different speakers, that one of them is asking a question and one of them is giving the answer. Of course, the material doesn't always lend itself to that, because even in an interview, you don't always have a question. Sometimes it's more like a statement with which the interviewee will then either agree or disagree or expand on. But sometimes it's a format that can work relatively well. An alternative to saying question and answer is to give names or labels, if you like, to the speakers. And that's often what I do when I know that I'm being taken on relay. If I'm working in a meeting, for example, at the Council of the European Union, and around the table are the delegates from all the member states, the chair representing the country that holds the rotating presidency, the legal service and the commission, then I will give them little tags. And when a new speaker begins, I might say, the commission, blah, 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 blah. Or Germany, yes, Chairman, we agree with the proposal. Or the secretariat, I will circulate the minutes, Chairman. That is one way that you can indicate who is speaking next. Sometimes you can even say a person's name. And this is where we're getting into territory where the interpreter doesn't always interpret what they hear. Sometimes your role is to communicate and communicate by saying something different from what you hear in order to give the meaning or the intention or the information that your audience needs to know. Next technique is to make sure that you use intonation very deliberately. So make it really clear with your voice, with the music of your voice, whether something is a question, for example. And that will depend on the intonation of your target language and whether, for example, your voice should go up in pitch at the end if it's a question, or should go down in pitch if it's a question. Then you have quite a lot of options of words that you can use, which I am going to call discourse markers. Discourse markers are ways in which we connect information in utterances. That sounds rather technical. You may be more familiar with the discourse markers that we call linking words or connecting words in writing or in reading or in interpreting. Connecting words are things like and, but, so, therefore, despite, nevertheless, all that kind of thing. The discourse markers that I'm going to talk about now, which help you to indicate that a new person is beginning their turn, are called, guess what, turn initial discourse markers. Turn initial discourse markers. There's a complicated way of saying something pretty simple, and that terminology comes from the field of linguistics, which I'm always fascinated by because I studied linguistics at university. Now, in conversation, we use a whole series of turn initial discourse markers that are not necessarily appropriate when you're interpreting. It depends on the register of what you're interpreting, whether your speakers are having a conversation and it's pretty informal and they know each other quite well, or whether it's a rather more formal setting. In conversation, you may recognise some of these turn initial discourse markers. Anyway, that's something that people say to sort of sum up and move on. Maybe when they've been debating a question for some time or going round and round in circles, and then they wrap it up by going, well, anyway, I think we should do this. Other turn initial discourse markers, yeah, and even no. Or, yeah, no, you may have heard in conversation or in text messages. Something like, yeah, no, I really don't think that she's right. Actually is another turn initial discourse marker that you'll hear in conversation. And you know, which is a filler. So it doesn't genuinely mean you know this, because if it did, it would be something like, as you know, and I'm sure you've come across as you know in speeches. Often speakers say, as you know, or as we all know, or I'm sure you know, or I'm sure you've heard. In a way, those are things that are also discourse markers, not necessarily at the beginning of somebody's turn. But I'm getting sidetracked. So these are ones that you will hear in conversation, but that are not necessarily appropriate for a conference interpreting situation. It depends on the register. Now, there's another set of turn initial discourse markers that can be used if the speaker agrees with a course of action that is being outlined or proposed by the previous speaker. So, for example, the previous speaker might say, I suggest that we revise the minutes and circulate them to everybody by Friday. Or I think our approach should be to include 5 more NGOs in this conversation. Something like that. And the next speaker goes, fine, or good, or great. So something like, great, we have a way forward now, or good, let's make sure that that happens before Saturday. Or, fine, I've noted that you will draw up the minutes. A useful set of discourse markers, then, if your speaker agrees with a course of action or a proposal that the previous speaker has made. Then, another series of discourse markers that can be quite useful and that have a relatively neutral register, so they don't sound as colloquial as things like, you know, or anyway, but they don't sound very formal either, are things like, well, okay, right, and so. I've actually recorded a whole podcast episode about whether you should avoid saying so and like. And then there is a different episode about whether we can eliminate ums and ers. So is a discourse marker that people often use at the beginning of a sentence or when they start a new turn, and it's their turn to speak. The problem with using it in interpreting is that so is also a logical connector between ideas that indicates consequence. This happens, so we must do that. And therefore it can be a little bit confusing to some relay takers, perhaps, or the audience, depending what their mother tongue is or depending where and when they learnt their English. It can be a bit confusing to have a so used as a way of showing that you're beginning a sentence, but it doesn't actually have any meaning. It doesn't mean therefore. So it's not necessarily one that I would advocate using. Right can be used to mean let's do this. It's a sort of motivational word. Right, let's turn to the next agenda item, for example. And well has all sorts of meanings. It can just mean this is a new turn, I am beginning to speak. Or it can indicate an opinion on what the previous speaker has said. So it's almost the answer to a question. It can indicate agreement. It can indicate partial agreement. For example, if one speaker said, I think democracy is dying. And the next speaker says, well, it could be argued that. You can hear from the intonation that that is partial agreement or perhaps skepticism. Sometimes well is used as a challenge. I think democracy is dying. Well, if you think that, So you can see that the combination of the word well and the use of intonation can tell you whether that word indicates agreement, disagreement, partial agreement, or challenge. You could also start a new speaker with words that indicate agreement with what the previous speaker said. For example, right. Especially if you're in an American English context. I often hear my brother who lives in the US or his wife latching on to what a previous speaker has said or following on from what somebody else has said with the word right, where perhaps a British English speaker would say yes or even absolutely. That was my section on discourse markers. What else can you do? Well, if you haven't used the right intonation to indicate that something is a question, you could use question tags. For example, you could say something phrased as a statement and then go, isn't it? Aren't they? Didn't we? Isn't that so? And that can help you out of a bind if you've phrased something more as a statement than as a question, but it should have been a question, or you want to make it a question so that you can follow into what the next speaker is going to say by way of reply. So you could even perhaps insert something like, isn't that the case? Wouldn't you say? Is that how you see things? As a way of smoothing that transition between one speaker and the next. You can also start a new speaker with a higher pitch of your voice. So if the previous speaker, the first speaker, is finishing a statement and therefore their voice is going down in English, then you might start the next speaker on a higher pitch. For example, well, I think we all have to agree that democracy is dying. I'm not sure that I would say that, actually. So you can see the second speaker is starting on a higher pitch. And you could also increase the volume a little bit at that point to differentiate between the two speakers. Some of my Rock Your Retour members said they used two different voices for the two different speakers. I don't think they meant that they were putting on a voice, you know, making one of them sound like Boris Johnson and one of them like Theresa May. I think they mostly meant a difference in pitch, one of them a lower voice, for example, and one of them a higher voice. You could also insert some information to make what your speaker says a bit more specific, again, to show the connection between two speakers. For example, you could say, well, to answer your question, or on that point, or let me address the point that you've just made. Lots of ideas there. I hope that you have found something in there that will be useful in helping you turn take in simultaneous. And I just wanted to finish by coming back to the field of linguistics, or strictly speaking, pragmatics, which is not about the meaning of words, as in the sense of those words, but it's about how we use words to indicate certain things. For example, to indicate that we're apologizing, or to indicate that we're being polite, or to indicate that we are passing the time of day. And sometimes we do all these things with unexpected words. So pragmatics is also about how we manage conversations and what our expectations are of conversations. For example, if you phone somebody up and they pick up the phone and they don't say hello, you end up totally confused because your expectations of how an interaction should unfold are completely thwarted. So to come back to the area of pragmatics, I went and did some research on how people take turns in conversation. And I read, for example, a paper called Transitioning to a New Topic in American English Conversation, a Multi-Level and Mixed Methods Account by a certain Marine Rioux. Now, I'm not going to go into detail on this particular paper, but it seemed to me likely that there would be parallels between how interpreters show that there is a new speaker taking the floor and how people in conversation transition to a new topic when there are several people conversing. And I was very interesting to read the abstract of this paper, which indicates that several cues are used, verbal and cues to do with prosody. And basically, the author shows that the topic transition is indicated by turn initial discourse markers and changes of pitch in the voice of the speaker. So it 100% confirms everything that my Rock Your Retour members have said and all the ideas that I have just covered with you in this podcast, namely that you can insert some little words at the beginning, you can speak on a higher pitch or a lower pitch, and you can make sure that the intonation shows whether it's a question or not. I hope that you found this podcast useful, that it's given you some ideas. Do email me at info@theinterpretingcoach.com if you have other ideas to contribute, or if you disagree, I'd love to hear from you. And you can also fill in the short form in the show notes to tell me what you would like me to speak about next. Speak to you soon.